I have the graded homework here from Friday, if you could pass it around. One small remark, I've given points in the homework when something was there. This does not always mean that your problem is completely correct. In particular, when, then this was again on the, this time that we had to have a question, is something a group? What I want to see is not just written property 1, 2, 3 and then check marks behind it. What I want to see is an explanation why these properties hold. So I'm not asking the question because I don't know whether there are groups and I want an indication, yes, they are, but I want you to show me why they are. So you could do this by showing that they are a subgroup of something bigger, you're doing the subgroup test, or you could do it by showing that they fulfill the group axioms or so. You don't, sometimes it's easiest to actually use formulas and to do things. Sometimes one can argue with text. I think in general it is very helpful to have at least some text there and not just written formulas, but please, in the exam, if there, I think it is not unperceivable or even rather likely that there will be a problem which asks, is something a group? And there, if you just write property 1, 2, 3, all properties are fulfilled, therefore it is a group, I don't think you will be getting more than 2 out of 20 points or so, if it doesn't show how you were arguing. So please do this. Okay. I also have new homework here for next week, if you could pass this around, get the colored version. To preempt questions, the exam is 5 problems. Of those, 2 are ring type problems, basically ones which is an ideal problem and ones which is a homomorphism problem, and the others are more group type problems. Each problem counts the same amount, 20 points for 100 in total. You may bring a sheet, if you want, double-sided written, handwritten with notes, whatever you want to write on it. If you want to bring a calculator, you can bring a calculator, but I really don't think that a calculator will, well, it might help you if you want to draw a nice line that you can put, hold the calculator and draw if you don't have a ruler or so, but I can't imagine where a calculator would help you. Yeah? For what do you mean? For a group? If you prove the axioms, well, if I see that you prove the axioms, that's fine. I just don't want that it just says, I mean, there were solutions which said problem, I don't know what the problem number was, but it said, then basically in the case it said 1, 2, 3. Well, I mean, this is no explanation at all. This is just, I mean, you might have done it, but I can't see how it holds, right? What I would want to see is, I want you want to see an argument, why is the product of 2 elements, say if you do the subgroup test, why is the product of two elements from the subset again in the subset? I want to see why is the inverse, if you have an element, why is there an inverse in the subset? What is the, if you don't use a subgroup, if you go through the axioms, what is the identity element and why is it the identity element? And yes, if it's things which just end up that you, I mean, if it's matrices and you tell me the identity element is the identity matrix, that's pretty clear. You don't need to go through trivial calculations just with the arithmetic, but I want to see what the element is or some indication what the element is, not just there is an, the words there is an identity element. So in some way, if you want to check whether it is enough, basically see if there was a different problem, would your solution is, if you just would, what you write as a solution, if it does not refer to the problem, it very likely is not sufficient as a solution, because then it's really not clear why did you solve, did you actually solve the problem? Okay. Right. In the sample problems, there accidentally a question moved in which asked, is a subgroup cyclic? We haven't yet done the definition for this, so you can just ignore that part. This was copied from previous semesters and it accidentally sneaked in. Also, the last problem of the sample problems, problem 10, this is there, well, this almost would have been a homework problem, and then there wasn't, I had already enough homework problems. This is almost there just as a motivation problem for those of you who had linear algebra. There you might have seen the definition of a characteristic polynomial and probably also of a minimal, of minimal polynomials, and that definition is rather complicated in linear algebra. You really need, one really needs to do a lot of work. You do, you're doing the Jordan canonical form to finally get to it. This year you have basically a different definition, and that definition is very slick and easy. It's just a generator for a certain ideal, and that ideal is the kernel of a certain homomorphism. But since not all of you had linear algebra, this is something which I probably cannot put in an, this is a problem which I cannot put in an exam. So while I'm happy to go through the problem, don't consider this as something which is enormous. I mean, if you had linear algebra, I would hope you will be able to do it. But if not, don't panic about this as a problem for the exam. I don't have anything prepared as a review, but I'm happy to answer questions. And if there are no questions, we can obviously also go on with new material. So are there questions?
So for number three,
yeah,
on the review, to show that something, I just have in my notes that that one table we went through was a K-Lie table. But how would you
The one which I've given there, I think it is not. Okay. Okay. You don't necessarily need to have groups in the table. This group, these blocks in the table. The blocks are a side. The blocks come from a side effect because this group has proper subgroups and these proper subgroup has cosets. That's where the block structure came from. But if you take the integers modulo 5 under addition and you write down the basically the addition table, which is then the multiplication table, because we call the operation multiplication. If you look at that table, you will not see any structure in there, any block structure in the table. So that's not a criterion. If I would give you such a multiplication table and the thing actually was a group, that would be a slightly nasty problem, actually, because you would have to verify associativity. And the only way how you can verify associativity with a table is to try them all out. So then you would have 125 products, and at least to say, yes, I've checked all 125 products. But I mean, it's unlikely that you can really check them all in less than 20 minutes or so. So it is rather likely that this is not a group. So how can this be not a group? Clearly, the multiplication lies again in the set. That's just how the multiplication table is given. You could have that there is no identity element, right? So there has to be a row and a column which correspond to the same element where the entries are just the same entries as are on the sides. If not, you don't have an identity element. And there have to be inverses in every row and every column. Every symbol has to occur. Well, this table has at least the property for the inverses. Every symbol occurs in every row and every column. And it has to be associative. And if it's not associative, typically, if you just try a few cases, you will see rather quickly that it's not associative. So in this case, I think if you just try out, pick three random elements and look at the two possible ways how you can make the product A times first, A times B, times C, and A times B times C, where you evaluate B times C first, and you will probably see rather quickly something where the products, where it doesn't give you the same. And then you can just write that down. It's not associative. This product is not the same as this product, and therefore it's not a group. Other questions? Yeah?
To clarify that, a Cayley table is something
that's a group. A Cayley table is the same thing as a multiplication table.
Oh.
And it is just, in the case of groups, the multiplication table is sometimes called Cayley table in honor of Arthur Cayley, who was a British mathematician, who was one of the first people working in group theory. And I have no idea why there is otherwise no good reason why you would use two different terms for it. Other questions? Yeah?
On number 5 with the U of
12,
that's a permutation.
No, U of 12, these are the units modulo 12. These are the numbers from 1 to 11 which are co-prime to 12. Right? So U of 12, and it's also not the under 12 soccer team or so. U of 12 consists of the numbers 1, no, not 3. 3 is 4 is not in there, 1, 5, 6 is not, 7 is in there, 8 is not, 9 is not, 10 is not, and 11 is in there. That would be U of 12, and our operation is multiplication modulo 12. So 1 times 1 is 1, 5 times 5, 25 modulo 12 is also 1, 5 times 5 is 1, and then it's not that hard to see that 7 times 7 and 11 times 11 also is 1, and 5 times 7 is 11, and so on. So that's this group. You had a question about the, I don't even remember what the problem was asking, to find all the subgroups or?
Determine the elements and their orders.
The elements and their orders. Okay, yeah. So if we ask for, well, these are the elements, what are the orders? Well, for order, I need to see if I multiply an element, I need to multiply the element with itself and to see at what point do I get the identity. Well, here I get it after, for 1, I get it after. It's immediately the identity, so this has order 1. 5 times 5 is 25, modulo 12 is 1. So this has order 2, while 5, and it doesn't have order 1 because 5 is not 1. 7 times 7, 49. 48 is a multiple of 12, so this also has order 2. 11 times 11 is 121. 120 is a multiple of 12, so this also has order 2. Yeah?
Can the order of 1 also be 0?
No.
Okay.
Order is always a number which is 1 or bigger. And in the definition, if you look back, I say explicitly the smallest strictly positive integer. No, we do not allow order 0. What we allow is order infinity if you multiply it, and you would never get the identity element. And we had seen in a lemma that if the group is finite, all elements must have finite order. And that's why in all these small examples, all elements have finite order. But if you take, say, all invertible matrices over the rationals, it's easy to find elements of infinite order. So for example, if my group is GL2Q, the invertible 2x2 matrices over the rationals, and I take as element this matrix here, then the order of A is infinity. Because if you multiply this with itself, what just happens is that this number basically counts how often this entry in the upper right corner counts how often you multiply together. So this gets bigger and bigger, and you never get it down to 0. So that would be an example of an element of order infinity. Other questions? Yeah?
And the rest are ordered two because they're like, you square them.
Yes.
Take mod 12.
Yes.
And just add the identity element.
No, I don't add the identity. If I square the mod 12, I get 1, which is the identity. So the order is 2 because it's the second power which already gives me the identity. If the second power was not the identity, so let's pick another group. Let's say I look at the units modulo, let's say I look at the units modulo 9. What do I have there? I have 1, 2, 4, 5, 7, and 8, right? Now, what are the orders there? 1 certainly has order 1. What is the order of 2? 2 by 2 is 4. 4 times 2 is 8. 8 times 2 is 16. Modulo 9 is 7. 7 times 2 is 14. Modulo 9 is 5. 5 times 2 is 10, modulo 9 is 1. So the order of 2 is 6 in this case.
Can you do that again?
Okay. 2 by, okay, I just multiplied 2 with itself. So 2 is not equal to 1. 2 times 2 is 4 is not equal to 1. 2 times 2 times 2 is 8 is not equal to 1. 2 to the 4 is 16, but in this group 16 is the same as 7, and that's not 1. 2 to the 5 is 7 times 2, which is 14, modulo 9 is 5, and that's not equal to 1. 2 to the 6 is 2 times 5 is 10, modulo 9 is 1, so therefore the order is 6. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just, when you started doing the modulo
logic, yeah.
I got lost.
Okay.
7 times 2.
Yeah. Okay. So in some way the order, it's a little bit like a, well, what you have in a group is suddenly that one has many roots. In a group, every element of finite order is a root of one. And in some way you're looking, it's a little bit like a logarithm. Well, it's not exactly the logarithm, but it's a little bit the idea like a logarithm. Other questions? Yeah. Okay. To show that Sn is not abelian for n greater or equal than 3. Okay, so what to show that a group is not abelian, typically the easiest way is just to give two elements in the group where the product A times B is not the same as the product B times A. Okay, that I say for n greater or equal than 3, you can do that, you give me particular permutations for every n, you give me a pair of permutations in some formula or so, but you can actually observe that S3 is a subgroup of S4, and S4 is a subgroup of S5, and so forth. So if you give me two elements in S3 which do not commute, they are also elements of S4 which do not commute, and of S5 which do not commute, and so forth. So you just need to give me two permutations on 3 points which do not commute. And basically, unless one of them is the identity, you will hit oil when you just pick, and they are not the same or they're inverses. Things will work or will not work. They will not commute. Okay? Other questions? Yeah?
On the homework you just returned, the bonus problem that we did, you asked for another possible rotation to flip the letter around.
Yeah?
You commented on how do you show this. Would you To show that this new permutation would work, what would you like us to do?
Oh, okay. I mean, what I... In this problem, this depends on... Probably there is just a little bit text missing which says, okay, this is what you wrote down is the decision tree, and you observe that, and to give some indication that indeed this would do all the testing.
Okay.
But this is something specific to your solution. If you have a question about this, come afterwards. It's also, this kind of problem is something which I'm unlikely to put on an exam, because it just takes longer just to understand what the problem is about. We have just an hour for the exam and we have five problems. So you should be able to do a problem in 10 minutes. And if you need to spend already 5 minutes or so just to think about, oh, what does the problem ask or so, that doesn't really make sense. Other questions? Yeah?
Nine. That's the...
Okay, so we want to construct a field with 16 elements, and it says already constructed as quotient of a polynomial ring. So we take as a ring, we take the polynomials over the field with two elements. Okay. And now I want to take an ideal in there so that the quotient ring has 16 elements. And 16 is 2 to the 4. If we look at the examples which we had in class, it's very plausible that we should choose a polynomial of degree 4, because if we take a polynomial of degree 4, the remainders will be polynomials of degree up to 3, or I can describe the remainders by the cosets by polynomials of degree up to 3, and there I have 4 coefficients which I can choose freely, which would give me 16 elements. So as ideal, presumably I want an ideal generated by a polynomial P of x, where the degree of this polynomial should be 4. Okay. Right, so the next question is, what kind of polynomial can I choose? Can I choose any arbitrary polynomial? Well, I want this quotient ring to be a field. So I need the ideal to be a maximal ideal. The quotient modulo an ideal is a field, if and only if the ideal is a maximal ideal. Unfortunately, maximal ideal is something which is rather hard to test, and in general, actually, if I'm asking about something being a maximal ideal, typically it's easiest to check whether the quotient ring is a field. But we also need that the quotient ring is an integral domain, which would mean that the ideal has to be a prime ideal. Prime ideal meant it can't happen that we have a product of two polynomials in the ideal so that neither of the factors is. And for such principal ideals, ideals generated by a single element, it means we can't have a polynomial which can be factored. So we need this polynomial P of x so that we can't factor it. Okay, so how can we find such a polynomial? And yeah, doing this for degrees, for 16 elements is probably making it a little bit too hard for the exam. On the other hand, since these are practice problems for the exam, I didn't really worry that much with the practice problems on how long does it take to do them. So that's why this particular one ended up in there. So how can I find such a polynomial? Well, I know that P of x has to start with x to the 4. I want to have degree 4. Okay, and now basically I'm guessing. Well, I certainly want that the constant term is 1, right? Because if the constant term is 0, I have x as a factor and I have already lost. So I actually want that my constant term is 1. Okay, and now, in some way I'm left with trying out. So let's say I pick x to the 4. Well, x to the 4 plus 1 is not so good an idea, right? Because that is the same as x plus 1 to the 4 if you multiply it out. Right here, modulo 2 plus is the same as minus. So this would be the same as x to the 4 minus 1, and you could write it as x squared minus 1 times x squared plus 1 using the binomial formula. And then you can factor one of them even more. So that I need something else in there. So let's say I choose plus x plus 1. Okay. Now there is, and this is something you don't really need to know, this is just a fact which I knew when I made the problem. You actually have pretty good chances if you write down a polynomial over a finite field that it is irreducible. So that it cannot be factored. So I'm quite optimistic that this cannot be factored. How can we prove this? Well, can it have linear factors? Well, linear factors are easy. Then I would have to have a root. And I just have two possible roots and I can just try them out, right? P of 0 is 1, P of 1 is 1, so P of x has no linear factor. Okay, can it have a quadratic irreducible factor? Well, you might remember from the lecture when we did something for the field with four elements or similar rings that there is only one polynomial of degree 2 over the field with two elements which cannot be factored. So x squared plus x plus 1 is the only irreducible polynomial of degree 2 in this polynomial ring over the field with two elements. So if this had quadratic factors, the quadratic factors would have to be both these. If it had quadratic factors, it would have to be the square of this. And it clearly is not, because the square of this is x to the 4 plus x squared plus 1. Or you can try out polynomial division and you see this is not a divisor. Okay. And that's why I said this is probably a little bit lengthy-ish for an exam problem, because this quadratic factor thing is a bit nasty. Linear factor, if I had something of degree 3, it's easier, because then I just need to bother with linear factors. Okay, so, but this aside, let's take this polynomial. Okay, so my construction is now basically just consider the quotient ring Q, which is this polynomial ring modulo the ideal generated by x to the 4 plus x plus 1. Okay. Right, so that's the construction, and now I should in an exam also give at least some indication why this is going to work. I know this is an ideal, so the quotient set is certainly a ring. I get this for free. I get also for free that it's a commutative ring with 1, because this is a commutative ring with 1. How many elements has the quotient ring? Basically, we've answered this already in the way how we determined that we have degree 4. We can represent the cosets by polynomials of degree smaller than 4, and there are exactly 16 of them. So therefore, the quotient ring has 16 elements. And that's something where you should at least write a few words there in the exam. I know I'm just talking here, but that's in part because we have limited time. Don't just write it has the quotient ring has 16 elements, but give me an indication. Okay, so finally, you need to show that it is a field, that every element has an inverse. How do you show this? Well, in the quotient ring, now, just think back at how did we do this initially. We used the Euclidean algorithm, and you can do the same thing here. So if I plus some polynomial is an element of this quotient ring, and I have that the degree of A is smaller than 4, so the degree of A is smaller or equal than 3, and a of x is not the zero polynomial, right? Because zero clearly won't have an inverse. Then, how do I construct the inverse? Well, I construct it with the extended Euclidean algorithm, and what I just need is for this is that I have GCD 1. So then I know that the GCD of x to the 4 plus x plus 1 with a of x is 1. And why is the GCD 1? Because this doesn't have any proper divisors. Right? If this has smaller degree and this doesn't have any proper divisors, well, then any GCD would have to have strictly smaller degree because it would have to divide this of smaller degree. Then the GCD is 1. And then by the Euclidean algorithm, you know there must exist polynomial S of x and T of x such that S of x times x to the 4 plus x plus 1 plus T of x times A of x is equal to 1. And then T of x gives you the inverse. Then you get that the ideal plus A of x times the ideal plus T of x is 1. And why is it 1? Because it is actually equal to the ideal plus A of x times T of x, and A of x times T of x because of this equation is the same as 1 minus S of x times x to the 4 plus x plus 1. Well, x to the 4 plus x plus 1 lies in the ideal, so S of x minus this also lies in the ideal, and if I change cosets by elements of the ideal, coset representatives by elements in the ideal, this doesn't change the coset, so this is the same as I plus 1. So this is in more detail than you would have real. In the exam, if you just would get to this point, I would be more than happy. The explanation why every non-zero element has an inverse. And then you've shown the quotient ring really is a field. Okay? I don't remember whose question it was. Other questions? Yeah.
The
elements in S5 where the order is at most 2. Okay. So is this a subgroup? Well, there are two ways how one can look at it. One can on the one hand see, do we have anything for multiplicativity of order? And we basically don't. Multiplicativity of order is something we didn't have any statement about, and indeed there isn't really any kind of result. The other thing which one can try is just, let's look at some of these elements in there, and let's see whether it's actually closed under multiplication. Probably you don't want to do multiplication with the identity because that's not that particularly interesting, since you will get the same elements. So multiplication with the identity will clearly hold. So let's look at some elements which are not the identity. So can you give me two different permutations in S5 which have order 2? Yes, so can you give me two? Swapping 1 and 2, yeah?
3 and 4.
And swapping 3 and 4. Okay, these are two permutations. Unfortunately, these two... if you take these two, their product is the permutation 1, 2, 3, 4, which still has order 2. Which follows from the previous homework problem that the order of a permutation is just the least common multiple of the length of all these cycles. So here the order is the least common multiple of 2 and 2, which is 4. So That doesn't yet give me a counterexample. It doesn't give me a counterexample because in the product really nothing is happening. The points are disjoint. And therefore multiplying them has just the effect to write one cycle after the other. So for my counterexample, I probably should pick a permutation which overlaps in points. So can you give me a permutation of order 2 which overlaps in points but is not the same as this one? Two, three, okay. Okay, now if we multiply A times B, what do we get? One goes to two, goes to three. Three stays fixed, goes to two. Two goes to one, stays fixed. Okay, what's the order of this permutation? Least common multiple of three is three. And 3 is bigger than 2. So that's a counterexample to this set being a subgroup. Yeah? Does this answer your question? Okay.
If you picked as your, what do you call A, a permutation?
Yeah.
Okay. If you pick 1, 2 in brackets and then 3, 4.
Yeah. If you take the double 2 cycle, this still has order 2, yes. And you can, I mean, you can just verify it. Let's say I pick another, let's give it just another name. Let's say C is the permutation 1, 2, 3, 4. Now for the order of C, right, I need to multiply C with itself. What happens if I multiply C times C? Well, 1 goes, so I need to multiply this with itself. And what happens? 1 goes to 2, goes to 1. 1 stays fixed. 2 goes to 1, goes to 2, stays fixed. 3 goes to 4, goes to 3, stays fixed. 4 goes to 3, goes to 4, stays fixed. So everything stays fixed. So C square is the identity. So, and C itself is not the identity. So the first exponent for which I get the identity is 2. So therefore the order is 2. And what happens when you multiply these permutations? I mean, in general, when you power up such a permutation, it's not hard to see that you basically can power them up cycle by cycle. And why does this happen? That happens because if the cycles don't have common points, that was the problem we had initially, they don't interact in the multiplication. They can be, for example, they could cycles which don't involve any points, they actually commute in the multiplication. Because nothing is actually happening when I multiply them. I never have that some point has an image under the one cycle and then again an image under the other cycle to make actually anything interesting happen with a multiplication. So if I power up a permutation, I can just power up the cycles separately. And how do I power them up? Essentially by just saying I don't go one step in the cycle, but I go for the kth power, I would have to go k steps in the cycle. So clearly if I have a cycle of length k, its kth power will be the identity. And if I have cycles of different length, I need to have a power so that this is a multiple of all the cycle lengths. And the first time this to get the identity. And the first time this is happening is for the least common multiple. And that's basically the answer to, what is it, problem 59 or, no, it's not yet 50, 58, almost. Okay, but did this answer the question from earlier? Yes.
I have a related question.
Hmm?
The physical meaning between having the two brackets with the same C versus C equaling 1, 2, 3, 4 is...
Okay. So if I take another element, let's call it D, if I write, you mean this element here.
Yeah, the physical meaning between those two is, with the D, is it 1 goes to 2, 2 goes to 3?
Yes.
Whereas with the C, 1 goes to 2 and 2 goes to 1?
Yes, yes, that's exactly the difference.
And then as far as the setup, how would you tell the difference from a problem, I guess, or would that just be given to you?
What do you?
You were given information and had to build C.
I mean, I need to give you images of C. I mean, if I just say this, I think this is really not a problem when writing. This is a problem when talking. When I say I have the permutation 1, 2, 3, 4, this doesn't really, well, this is really hard to distinguish because you would have 1, 2, 3, 4. Did I just get air or do I mean a gap? Yeah. So for permutations, to give them in cycle form, typically you need to write them down or you need to make clear when talking where do your parentheses close and open again. Other questions? Yeah?
For the Q minus 0, I don't understand how it's different from just Q. I don't really know what you mean.
Oh, the rational numbers without 0.
Oh.
And, I mean, often, if formally what you do, there is a symbol which is this slash for set difference. Mm-hmm. But what I found is that quite a few students haven't seen this symbol, and that the minus symbol is somehow is easier to understand. So I take the non-zero rational numbers, and the only reason why I'm taking the non-zero rational numbers is otherwise, if I have zero clearly under multiplication, it won't be a group. Anything else?
Number 8.
Okay, so we have a ring homomorphism and we take an ideal and we want to show that the image of the ideal is again an ideal, right? So I think we had this as a homework problem for the, or was it, I think we even had this as a homework problem, as part of a homework problem. Okay, so we have a homomorphism. So phi, I hope, please correct me if the problem actually says something different. We have a homomorphism phi from R to S. We have A is an ideal in R,
in
S. It's an ideal in S, and we take B is those elements little r in R, so that phi of B lies in A. Phi of R lies in A. Right? Is that what the problem says? Okay. Okay. So that's what I want. I'm pretty sure we had this as part. We had a problem. We had a homework problem where it first asks if you have an ideal, the image is an ideal. Then it asks if you have an ideal, the pre-image is an ideal. That's what this is. And then part C was to show that ideals of the quotient ring are always, if you take the special case of the natural homomorphism for a quotient ring, show that ideals are always, of the quotient ring are always images of the ideal of the original ring. Yeah, so that's just a part of this. So how does this go? I need to show three things. I need to show B is not the empty set. Well, clearly I have that the image of 0, that phi of 0 is 0, and this has to be in A. Therefore, I know that 0 is in B, and therefore B is not the empty set, right? So I know B is not the empty set. Next step, I need to show that that the sum of two elements in B is again in B. So let X and Y be elements in B. What does this mean, that they are elements in B? This means that phi of X is in A and phi of Y is in A, right? That's the definition of this set B. It's the elements whose image lies in A. Okay, so now I want to test, is X plus Y in B? So let's consider X plus Y. what happens if I take x plus y? Sorry, x plus y, how can I test that it is in B? Well, I need to test this property here, right? So if I take x plus y and I apply phi to it, what do I get? Because it's a homomorphism, I get phi of x plus phi of y. And I can observe that phi of x is an A and phi of y is an A, so this is again an A, right? So therefore I have that x plus y is an element in B. Finally, multiplication. And there it's sufficient to take multiplication with an arbitrary ring element. So let A be an element in this set B, and let R be an arbitrary ring element. I want to show that phi, that A times R lies in there. So I consider A times R, and I consider the image under phi. And I need to show that this is an A, that this phi of A times R is in A. Then I'm done, right? Because then I know that A times R lies in B. So what is this? Well, it clearly is phi of A times phi of R. And phi of A lies in A, because it lies in B, and all elements in B are mapped into A. That was the definition of B. Well, this lies in A, and A was an ideal. And this is just some element of the ring S. Doesn't matter what element it is. If I have an ideal, and I'm element of an ideal, and I multiply with an arbitrary element, I stay in the ideal. Definition of ideal. So this lies in A. So I have shown that A times R under phi is mapped into A. So this shows that A times R must lie in B, because B are all the elements which are mapped into A. Right, but that was exactly what I needed to show, the last step I needed to show that B was an ideal. Right, if there is any last short question, I'm happy to answer.
Do you have any office hours tomorrow?
I don't know. You're welcome to try at 2, but I cannot guarantee whether I will be there, because unfortunately, I mean, normally this is formally a scheduled meeting time, but it's a meeting which happens rather rarely. But the person who calls the meeting, unfortunately, is always just telling me Monday evenings or even just Tuesday mornings whether it happens or not. So you're welcome to try, but I can't guarantee.